Brennan, welcome to the Lewis and Kyle Show. I'm pumped to be chatting today. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Lewis.
Of course, I want to ask, it's been about a month, I think, maybe 3 weeks since you launched the book, This Is Personal, The Art of Delivering the Right Email at the Right Time. How's that going? How's that been?
It's going a lot better than I thought, to be honest. This book thing is completely new to me. I've been selling, I guess, digital products like courses for more than a decade now online, and it's the first time dealing with a publisher. It's not self-published. It's proper like publisher and book agent and all that stuff. And it's been interesting. Like, I mean, it's been cool knowing that a bunch of people are reading it. It's been fun seeing on like Twitter people, when they got their copy in the mail. But it's still a bit like one thing I do hate is the inability to modify it post, delivery. So like there's things I want to add to it or change or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I guess I really can't. But otherwise it is going well. I'm very happy with the reception so far.
It's exciting. What was your decision to go traditional publishing?
Bucket list, honestly. Just I wanted to like I didn't a few reasons. Like I didn't really care, and I still don't really care about the revenue side of the book, right? Like the goal of the book is to be something I can basically like, I have a few things going on. I have a SaaS, I have a software or an agency, and then I sell courses and stuff, and I've been giving out the book like for free basically to like high value people that I want to have hire us and everything else. So it's been great for that. And on top of that, self-published, I wouldn't have known how to get it into bookstores, but now it's in like Barnes and Noble and stuff in the States. So really just wanted to be able to like say I have an actual book.
That's awesome. Let's actually do an overview of those couple of projects you're working on. So again, you have the SaaS agency, obviously the book, which we'll cover, but like, what do those different businesses do?
Yeah, so my thinking, I mean, it wasn't intentional by design, but the way it's panned out is I have a software product, which is kind of my main thing, called Right Message. And that is lead generation and segmentation and website personalization software. So think of it like Optimizely with like lead generation and serving built into it. So that's kind of my main thing. And on top of that, my way of growing that business has been through this kind of personal brand that I have around writing about all things email marketing, because even though we're website software, we feed data into email platforms and stuff like that. So that's Create and Sell. That is a twice weekly email list that I've been running for the last 3.5 years or so. I also have behind that, I've got a few courses in one main course, the main course being Mastering ConvertKit. And then on the other end of the spectrum, as of the summer, really due to demand, I've started an agency where we basically do done for you implementation of what I teach in that course, along with getting people fully up and running with Right Message and website personalization stuff and everything like that. And that's been going well too. So everything I'm doing now is really trying to cover the full spectrum. I have courses for people who want to do it yourself, and then I have a done for you offering now. And then what ties it all together really is Right Message, which is kind of the end goal of everything.
Where did you start your online career?
So back in the mid 2000s, so like 2006, 2007, I had started a web development agency, and like you and I were just talking about, Lewis, got tired of building things for other clients, and I just wanted to kind of build my own software. So in 2011, I started a SaaS, and this was back before SaaS was like, I had to like fill out like a 20-page application form to be able to run credit cards and stuff. Like it was a very different world back then.
Before Stripe, so.
And I started a SaaS called PlanScope, which was a project management tool for agencies and freelancers. So basically the tool like we built in-house, and we made it a public thing. That did okay-ish. It never really took off. But what did take off with that was, in order to get customers, I started blogging about everything I knew about client stuff. So pricing projects and writing proposals and everything. And that content side of the business, which the goal was to get people to read the blog stuff and then sign up for Write or for PlanScope. That didn't really work as well. But what did work was building the email list. So, that list got to about 50,000 people purely from organic SEO stuff. And this is back before there were like that many other people writing about freelancing or whatever. So I was able to kind of get to the top of Google pretty easily without really knowing what I was doing. And that did really well. That actually led to my first few courses, first one being released in 2012. And I used to host events, so conferences in the US and Europe. So one in Sweden, one in the US every year. And then in 2016, that was really taking off. So I sold my first company, PlanScope. And a year later, got bit by the software bug again and raised some funding and brought on a co-founder to start RightMessage. I have somebody now running the freelancing website. So in case anyone wants to know what that's still around, it's just not, I'm not day-to-day involved in that.
So that freelance blog is still active.
Yeah, that's doubleyourfreelancing.com. And it's still active. I'm just not, I own it, but I'm not involved in it every day.
Do they still promote your own tooling or do they recommend like a ClickUp Now or a Asana?
No, so I haven't. So funny, that original product, PlanScope, I sold it in 2016, like I mentioned. And the guy who bought it cashed out his retirement to buy it because he wanted to like own a SaaS. Mm-hmm. But he didn't want to go and like start one from scratch and all that kind of stuff. So we cashed out some money and bought it from me, but, unfortunately kind of ran it into the ground. So it's actually not existing any longer.
I think project management SaaS like is not what I would want to go after anymore. I don't like to compete when I don't have an advantage. And project management is like in my opinion, can you build the most features? Right, because now everyone expects everything to work perfectly and seamlessly, like native time tracking and maybe even invoicing and collaboration and chat and notifications and every platform compatibility. And that is just not an undertaking I would want to undertake.
It was a lot easier 10 years ago. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I would not want to do it again today.
So when did you start personalizing? So you grew the big email list kind of almost on accident. Is that fair to say? Like it wasn't this...
I never paid for ads or anything. It was just all, I post content and Google sent traffic.
Yeah. At what point did you decide that to start personalizing the emails besides like advanced personalization, besides like putting in a first name merge field or something?
Yeah. So it started actually not with emails, but with a website. So what ended up happening was, funny enough, if you Google like WordPress conversion funnel and my name, there's this plugin I did years ago when I was on Infusionsoft. And it was basically a tool that would pull in your Infusionsoft data and say, like, if they're on your list, show like, you know, don't show the opt-in form, show a promotion of some sort. So it allowed you to kind of, show different like calls to action based on who somebody was with that data. So that's where I started doing like the more lifecycle based or like customer journey based, call to action changes. But then the big thing was with Double Your Freelancing, our main course, Double Your Freelancing Rate. It started out people like me. So my background is I'm a software developer. And all of our early traffic came from like Hacker News because I was posting like how I pre-sold my course, you know, articles on Hacker News. And I built up a list, predominantly that way early on before Google kicked in. And then, my early social proof, like the first customers were all people like me. And then I remember I got an email from a copywriter who had heard about the course through referral and she was looking at it and she emailed me saying like, I don't see, like, can this help me? It looks like it's for developers and like web designers and stuff.
This is a course about how to increase your freelance income.
Yeah. Double your freelancing rate is about how to price yourself as a freelancer. So again, all the social proof was like people, developers and designer type people. And then when Google started sending, or in this case, a referral happened, but a wider audience showed up on my site where they were Googling, like, how do I write a proposal? Which they could have been a writer, they could have been a marketer, they could have been whatever. I
mean, any service provider.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I realized quickly, like, I got an email from her, didn't sink in then, but a bit later, I was thinking about that email and I it terrified me thinking like how many people didn't write in, but closed the tab and thought like, this isn't for me. So I put on my developer hat and said, well, if I could have somehow found out she was a copywriter, could I then just change the testimonials or, you know, headline or something to be like, learn how to better price your copywriting services or something. And that's really how it started. It was just a bunch of like if else code that I manually wrote. And that did well, and it started to work, and I started to be pretty public about how it was working and everything. And then my friend Ankur, who at the time was the CEO of Teachable, he gave me a call and said, like, what if you didn't do this for your, like, BS freelancing website and made this an actual product? Like, would you do that? And then we got to the point of, well, let's raise a fund. And he, because one of the primary investors was him, and we just did a small round and raised some money and then built a SaaS around that kind of internal tooling that I developed.
What do you think the difference is between, and I've heard you speak about this a couple other times, the difference between, you know, choosing to niche your messaging or like the kind of opportunity cost, right? Of like, do you niche your messaging, even though your product could service other people? Like that's kind of, there's almost like a spectrum or like a meme way of displaying this, right? It's like, that's the very logical reaction a lot of people have, right? It's like, well, you want your messaging to convert, so narrow it to only speak to a certain type of person. And you're basically, you know, kind of catalyzing this movement that's like, or just have dynamic messaging, then you don't have to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Like, I think like, so my wife runs a WordPress plugin business, and she actually found out as she went broader, like her overall conversions plummeted. She's been doing some of the stuff I tell her to do, like the personalization stuff, but it started to affect the product itself, right? So I think like when you're starting out, especially I still think you should go all in on like one type of buyer and just focus in on them. A lot of products over time will kind of realize, oh, well, you know, maybe agencies could use us too. And we add some reporting features and stuff and so on. But I think the big thing though, which even if you are pretty niche, you're always going to still find sub niches, right? Like, so like one of the people that we've been working with as an agency is Justin Welsh. Mm-hmm. And with him, like you'd think his niche is kind of like people who want to use social media platforms. So X and LinkedIn to be solopreneurs and like sell digital products and stuff, right? I mean, that's a focus, yet he's realized, well, there are people who are still aspirational. There are people who are actually doing that and surviving and living off their product revenue. There are people who like want to sell coaching. There are people who want to sell courses. So like, I think there's always going to be different sub niches of like level of experience or awareness or whatever else, that you can still capture and use to basically make a better case for why they should be interested in what you have to offer.
No, I think it's interesting because a lot of people, what they also do, right, is they just make a separate version of the site instead of like, or a separate version of the emails rather than segmenting inside of it, right? Just changing the headline, just make a completely different. Yeah. Again, if the advertisement's reaching a different audience, like just direct them to a different page altogether. So there's a lot of trade-offs there. And I can't imagine that there's like an absolute point of efficiency, right? It's kind of still a feel thing.
Yeah. I mean, I would say like, so I had a conversation recently with a friend of mine. He runs a like DNS filtering provider type thing. So like, if you're a parent, you don't want your kids seeing like porn, you can use it. Mm-hmm. Or if you're a subway system, London's, you know, underground, and you want to do the same thing, but for your entire, like every train running on the thing for anyone connected to the Wi-Fi, like the same product serves both audiences, right? So with him,
content moderation tools, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. With him, I'm like
DNS filtering as the mechanism.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so yeah, a home user, like a mom and dad could absolutely use that alongside like an enterprise. But I told him, I'm like, if I'm like the guy who runs London's subway system and I see a bunch of like mom and dads around like the dinner table with their kids and stuff, I'm going to think this isn't for us. Like, this is not a serious contender. So for that, I would say like, you want separate marketing altogether. You want a separate website. You want completely separate stuff. But for a lot of us, like where the distinction is, the industry or the job role or even things like why they're there, like what is their current struggle? What is something that has led them to even be interested in your product? I don't think that necessarily warrants a completely separate set of like marketing assets. It could just be, like you said, as simple as tweaking a headline, showing a different case study. That works really, really well because people in finance don't care about people in retail and don't care about people in construction or whatever, even though you might equally serve them all for your invoicing tool. So yeah.
Where did you go about teaching yourself marketing? Because again, it seems like you kind of had your first accidental success when you're just trying to get customers for developer service. And now you're kind of seen it and positioned as this like very, very authoritative marketing figure, both like generally speaking and also like within a sub niche. But how did you go about kind of acquiring those skills? Was it super deliberate or just you woke up one day and you're like, actually, I don't suck at this because I've been just trying so long at random stuff?
I mean, I'd like to say I'm the son of a timeshare salesman. That kind of helped in some ways, but
that's a literal statement.
Yeah. My dad was. So okay. Timeshare. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I learned more. I started out with high touch, right? So like selling the agency, there wasn't a buy now button or a sales page. It was discussions and a custom proposal. We didn't have anything productized. It was just all one off. Like, what do you want? Right. And then as I moved online, I took a course called 30 by 500 back in 2010, 2011. It's one of like the oldest courses out there on like building or bootstrapping products and selling them online. And that was taught by Amy Hoy and Alex Tillman, who are now really good friends of mine. And so that helped a lot with like getting away from like the startup-y thing of like, oh, I'm going to build something cool, to building against a pain point. And, she and Alex had a lot of really great content and training around like, how do you make sure you're building the right product? How do you actually get in front of people and so on? And then from there, it really just came from like needing to think, okay, well, I'm out of the agency. I need to make these like digital courses make enough to pay the mortgage. So just figure it out kind of thing. And I like at the time when I was starting doing this, I was kind of like in a little virtual mastermind with a bunch of people who are now doing ridiculously well. So like people like Nathan Berry and stuff. And we were all just like peddling digital courses at the time, right? Like that's what we did. But we were learning from each other and seeing like, you know, like I never really read any of the old like copywriting guru books from like the 80s or whatever. Like I still haven't to this day, to be honest. I just followed people online. Joanna Weeb of Copy Hackers, she was amazing back then and now on like how to write persuasive copy. I just kind of learned through, I guess, experience of having done this now for myself 12, 13 years.
I don't know if you've put out a tweet like this, but I think that'd be a great tweet. That's just like, even now, I've still never read, because just all those, you see a tweet every day that's just like, you know, Sugarman or Ogilvy or whatever, and just like, don't ever do anything. Don't even write a word before you've read this book seven times.
Yeah.
And
I mean, to be honest, like, I don't doubt they're great books. Like I was talking to Dickie Bush about like all the stuff he's read and everything. And
oh yeah,
Ogilvy and people like that show up all the time on like the prescribed reading list. I think I was always really aware, especially back then, of like, selling digital products then, there wasn't the term creator. It was more like we were selling info products, and the line between us and people with like the like from the desk of long form crazy sales pages,
yeah,
animated GIFs of like blinking shit. Like there was a very there we were like straddling that, right? Like at that point, like no one was like, oh yeah, go solo creator, like, you know, monetizing an audience or whatever. No, we were selling through tools like eJunkie, which if you've ever seen that, it was the most horrible looking like pre-Gumroad. Like Gumroad was a godsend, you know, when that debuted, because we were stuck using like PayPal with this crappy software, and it looked so bad. So I really didn't want to fall prey to like doing what, like, yeah, okay, yeah, I could talk about like you could, you know, fly private jets and get Lamborghinis if you kick ass as a freelancer or whatever. But I was just trying to be more like, I didn't have any of that stuff, but I didn't need to worry about where the next project was coming from. So, you know, if that's appeals to you, then listen to what I have to say.
Yeah, if that sounds like a nice outcome. I think people who listen to podcasts, and especially podcasts like this one, people who go on Twitter, have a very distorted view of market penetration of different things. So like extremely distorted, right? I think like everyone has a podcast. I mean, they're popular, but not everyone has a podcast, right? Like people like always talk about like on Thanksgiving dinner. It's like, how many people have podcasts? Right? It's like, not hopefully just you. But point being, what do you think in 2023 going into 2024 of the course landscape, email marketing landscape, building email lists? Cause a lot of these things seem like, you know, everyone on Twitter you follow, they're all their bios or join my email list or buy my course. So it's like, everyone's doing this. There's not room for me. Is that valid? Is it like peaking top signal, or is it kind of just like nuanced and you're just spend far too much time on Twitter and need to like remember that the world's a really big place?
I mean, this might be controversial. I do think we're in a bit of a newsletter bubble. Like, I think, like, I don't know if every single person needs a newsletter. I said it. I mean, I think, like, you know, it's a bit too bad too, because I remember, you know, those of us who remember RSS, like, the modern push toward newsletters is basically RSS, but RSS for whatever reason died. But there was a time when all of us who were bloggers back in the day, we were like going all, you know, all in on like RSS is going to change everything. It's going to, you know, be the, you know, it's going to be whatever. And, you know, it had its day. And then it's now kind of, I mean, it still obviously exists, but it's not anything anyone talks about anymore. But I think like, yeah, I mean, I think like when it comes to, you know, monetizing experience and stuff, I think the thing that I still think needs to be done, and I'm not just saying this because I've like, oh, I've been doing this 10 years and, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's, I think there needs to be more of an emphasis on not just knowing something, but knowing how to teach it well. And, when I started out, my ability to teach was really poor. And I like to think that over time, like through doing a lot of like live training and workshops, multiple courses and stuff, like I think I've gotten a little better at being able to convey complex topics and making it, you know, transferable to somebody else. But you don't see that as much. I think everyone's just obsessed about the medium, the course. You know, I'm going to sell courses, and they don't really think about like, I mean, maybe they do, but my assumption is that a lot of people, I think, aren't thinking about the, like, how do I learn how to be a good teacher first before I jump headfirst into doing that. So, I think it'll continue to be around. I think the urge, I mean, when you look at like most kids now looking up to YouTube influencers and stuff and wanting to be that when they grow up, I mean, this is a much more parallel way of being kind of like that than, you know, than actually being like the next Mr. Beast. I think it'll probably, as more people shy away from 9-to-5s, it'll continue to be a thing, but I just don't know how much. It's one of those things, like you were saying about the like misperceptions on social media, like to think that every course creator is making bank is a big mistake. Cause they're not, some people really
and same thing with newsletters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think newsletters as a business are an interesting thing versus just newsletters as part of a business. It's just like to monetize from. Right. I think that's a very big, I think that's something I'm not terribly as bullish on overall, yep. But versus just like your business and you give people just in terms of like revenue per subscriber, right? That's what the game 100%. Comes down to.
Yeah. I mean, I've always looked at my newsletter as being a sales channel as a way of like,
exactly.
Yeah. And which is again, why when the whole newsletter craze, you know, was happening in the last year or two and everyone seemingly was acting like newsletters just popped out of nowhere and hadn't been a thing. I'm like, I've been sending weekly for, you know, 13 years now. Like we've been doing it, but it was always a means to an end to build up trust and then pitch people on our own products and services. But newsletters as the end goal itself. And I know you could say, well, maybe you have like the paid newsletter, which is like upgrade and that's a product in its own right. Sure. Right. It's like a glorified membership site without community. But yeah, I don't know. I think newsletters are good and going to be increasingly more valuable as like, you know, I remember a time when if I tweeted something, I could reliably assume that anyone who followed me, if they were looking at Twitter right now, would see it, whereas those days are gone. So like, I think we're really, more of us are realizing how important it is to own our own distribution channels. And you know, with Twitter or with Facebook or whatever, you could build up a massive following. That doesn't mean that, you know, a high percentage will see them or we'll see what you have to say. But, with the news or with an email list, forget the newsletter thing, with the email list of people who have given you permission to sell to them basically or communicate with them. Yeah. I mean, that's something that I think is the most valuable.
Yeah. I think we'll probably come back to a place of, I mean, as with all things, right? If people do something because they think it's great because they're told it's great, but then they don't get results from it, then they'll stop doing it. And I think that's probably what's going to happen with, like, as you, a business owner, and you use email as a way to make sure that your message receives your prospects and it's done in a way that makes sense for everybody involved. It's something you're going to keep doing. Whereas all these people kind of just progressing through the different, like, touted effective thing of the day will just continue it if they don't actually have a backend or some reason to continue to put in the work. So that's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, maybe I'm in the minority. I don't think I am, but like, I've never woken up thinking like, I want to join more newsletters today. I get enough email. Like, the last thing I want is more stuff hitting my phone, unless it's really, really, really something I want to hear. So I think, like, I know everyone talks about like their tribe or their audience or whatever, but no one has an audience. We all have like a shared pool of people that are also subscribed to a bunch of other things, and everyone's vying for that one person's attention. So I think, like, yeah, this whole idea of like this one to many, I've got my tribe of people who like look up to me as like the God King. Like, that's just, yeah, doesn't work that way.
I'd agree with that. I think that's an accurate way people see the situation. That's not an accurate view of the underlying reality. I think back to what you're saying about, you know, courses back and focusing on being a teacher, right? It's like anything that's, if your course is actually something that helps people achieve a valuable result, and the people who desire that result are going to continue to be interested in it fundamentally. And same thing with a newsletter, right? So it's like a lot of people, you know, I think about all the newsletters I've churned from, right? It's not because I thought that person's writing wasn't good. It's just I progressed through that journey. So I moved on. And that's kind of what these things are. So it's like, as long as you're speaking to something that is consistently still valuable for that group of people, like, great, when I need to have my Bitcoin analysis this week, I'm going to be excited to look at my Bitcoin analysis newsletter. But if you decide you're done looking at analysis and you're just going to hold forever, then you stop reading the newsletter. And it's kind of how all these pieces, it's like everyone just abstracts what content is. It's just like, if you lose interest in the thing, you lose interest in the newsletter. It's not about losing interest in the news. It's not the newsletter you lost interest in first. It's the subject matter. It's the transformation. It's the thing you care about in your life as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, it's the equivalent of like the internet back button on a web browser, right? Like, you, when you unsubscribe, it's a bit like, when I was really into woodworking for a few weeks, like, I was looking at like the same content sources online. I don't look at them anymore. That doesn't mean they're crap. Like you just said, it just means like, yeah, you've graduated, or in my case, you just got lazy and forgot about that hobby. And, you know, like you just, yeah. And that's, I think that's to be expected. And I think like no one cares. It's weird. Like, back when blogging was a bit, quite a bit, had more emphasis than it does today. Like, 2% retention of page views was treated as normal. Like, you know, 100 people view your stuff, 98 leave. Like, that's, you know, you're doing something well. Good job. Where, like, we get, and I get it. Like, I think when you see like the name of the email address, and it's like, you know, Bob Smith@Gmail, unsubscribed. It's like you're like, oh, Bob Smith had a thought in his head where he's like, I hate Brennan, so I'm gonna, you know, unsubscribe his list or something. Which obviously, when it's more anonymous, like on your website, you don't get that same perception.
We've been a little light on the book itself. I want to give that a bit more airtime, as they say.
Sure.
What was the, who's like the target reader for this book? Is it like a beginner market? I mean, yeah, you'll tell me.
Yeah. So who I wanted to write this for was for somebody who understands the power of high touch sales. So they understand that if I can have a conversation one-on-one with somebody and I can feel them out, I can, you know, ask them questions and find out about who they are, what they're looking for, I can then tailor what I have to them in a way that makes sense. So like anybody involved in sales, that's what they do. You know, good salespeople don't read off scripts. They adapt a core script based on a conversation that's happening. So what I wanted to do is to be able to say to people who have kind of extended the way they sell to be online. So maybe they don't have a sales team, or they still have a sales team, but they're using their website as like an extended business card, or as a way to, like, you know, do whatever, and they're doing the same over email. I wanted to show people that you can reap a lot of the benefits you get from high touch sales, namely much higher conversion rates, much higher engagement rates, in a way that is infinitely scalable through both your website and the focus of the book through email. using off-the-shelf software that you're probably already paying for. So the thinking was, okay, well, if you can surface information about who somebody is and why they're following you, how can you then adapt the entire strategy you have for the relationship you have with them over email accordingly? So showing better content to them, pitching them when they're ready and only when they're ready, and just using, again, the tooling you're already paying for to do that.
Yeah. And I think the objection, back to some sales terminology here, a lot of people have, or like hesitation, is just seems hard, like details, and it's just like getting super granular to get this right. Is that kind of a misunderstanding? It's like, if you just have a playbook, which I imagine this book provides several playbooks, it's like, I don't want to say mindless, but it's just like, you're making it more difficult in your head than it actually is. It's not super technically involved to actually make like a big lift in terms of results. Like, what's your opinion on the effort reward matrix of doing stuff like this?
And that's really why I wanted to write the book, is I wanted to showcase examples of it being used with really great results. So, because that is the big objection, which is I'm spending an hour writing an email campaign. If I spend 2 hours and I spend the other hour doing a bunch of the personalization stuff, will the ROI be worth it? Right. And so my thinking around this is that I personally only focus, they're right in that it does require more upfront time, you know, thinking through what are 3 headlines I can show instead of 1 headline. Is it going to require more strategy and also more copywriting time? But I personally only focus on a few key things. I focus on the welcome sequences. I focus on my pitch sequences. And then I focus on any automatic call to action stuff that is included or embedded in my newsletters. And that's kind of what I teach in the book. Like, just focus on those 3 things. Because when you do this at scale, and I don't think that this makes sense for somebody with like 5 people or 10 people or a small number on their email list. When you do this at scale, and there's serious money involved, I mean, the work we're doing with some of our clients, they're seeing usually an average between a 20 to 80% lift in overall engagement and sales as a result of more personalized marketing. So you do a proper controlled A/B test and you say, this is the original, you know, pitch campaign that we're going to run for this product. We're now going to have a variation that is going to be multivariate. So it'll change depending on different inputs. So they're in this industry, they're in this focus, whatever. One of the examples, for instance, we just did something with a fitness influencer, and he's got a big audience, 200,000 people on his list. Those of you on Twitter have probably seen him pop up on your For You tab. And, he sells a course and he promotes that course through his newsletter. So at the bottom of the newsletter, it's like, here are some ways I can help you. And the main one is the course. He's had about a 26% increase in clicks, from the newsletter to the course sales page, which also correlates to nice boost in sales as a result of just saying, hey, if you're a female and you want to gain muscle and you travel a lot for work, you want to hear a different way of describing that course that will get you to click than a guy who wants to lose weight and they never travel or something, or they're pretty sedentary in that sense. And just by saying, like, let's just change the way the course is described based on these inputs, that's yielded 26%, which at his scale, you know, 7-figure yearly course business, that's big for him. And that's
worth
a
an hour
thing.
Right.
It took a few more hours. It took more than a few hours. But yeah, I mean, it's worth, you know, half a week of work to permanently increase click-throughs to his sales page by 26%. Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's not black magic. We're just saying, like, if I was at a conference and I'm talking to somebody in the hallway and they're like asking me about what I have to offer and asking about my business, you better believe I'm going to take into account, oh, I'm at a marketing conference, I can talk marketing stuff, or I'm at a dev conference, so I can talk more technical with them. And I change the way I describe what I do based on that. And we all do. So it's just doing the same thing, but in a way that if you're blasting out to 100,000 people, like they're each going to sell. In this, the example I just gave, there are 3,385 possible ways of describing his course. It sounds crazy, but it's all multivariate. So it's changing like the first sentence.
You're saying what you implemented for him results in that many permutations
over 3,000
in the final. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So everyone is going to get a very specific thing. And there's even randomness. So a lot of that number is based off of like there are 3 variations for each core audience. So they don't see the same message every week. And yeah, that alone is done it. And it's been running now a few months. It's consistently doing that. So, again, it's not black magic. It's just saying, like, make it more obvious why they should click that link and they'll click that link. Make it more obvious why they should click the buy now button and they'll click the buy now button. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the things that first made me, I don't want to say fall in love, but like, fall in love somewhat appropriate with marketing is stuff like this, right? It's like you make one tweak once and then just every person who comes through that, you know, that flow forever is just better. So it's like you make this 1% better here, this 1% better here, this 1% better here. Then just the compounding is tremendous, right? It's like now every incremental Twitter follower he has a slightly higher expected value. Yep. Like any increase anywhere in the entire ecosystem, any entry points on the surface is now of greater value because of this one change that was made.
Yep. And that's why the main KPI we track at, when we do this done for you stuff for clients is value per subscriber. We're not about growth. We don't help you get more people on your list. Our focus is on how do we make the average value per subscriber higher, which is exactly like what you're saying, which is what are the permanent things we can do that just make it so they're more likely to read what you have to say because they're getting a great welcome series that speaks to them and shows them, wow, I'm on the right email list. Or they're more likely to click through to the sales page, more likely to, you know, open your sales emails, whatever. Like that's all we care about is that. And I think any business should be focused on that. It's just, I think what you got at earlier, which is the truth, is that people are like, this is another growth hack, right? Mm-hmm. That is vying for my attention, which makes sense. And, but I'm biased, but I think it's a pretty good one because it does have a nice, when you do it right, it is evergreen. I don't personalize every newsletter I send out every week. Like, I don't think like, oh, I'm going to change the second paragraph of what I say. I don't do that at all. I just do it on the main key campaigns.
One guest who came to mind, I this is kind of connecting the dots here in my head. I don't know if you're familiar with Fermat e-commerce. It's kind of just an interesting idea. No. They basically make personalized landing pages for an influencer campaign.
Okay.
It's a different type of hyper-personalization. Or basically, if you clicked, like, think apparel, right? If you clicked a link through a particular influencer's TikTok campaign or something, then it's going to make sure that the model in that cover page is actually her.
That influencer, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's a lot of these, you know, just one of the marketing fundamentals is just make it easy to buy from you, right? Just make it easy to say yes to you.
Yeah.
And just the less complexity and confusion or the more clarity, it's just seamless.
Absolutely. I mean, we've done that with, I don't think you call them influencers, but we do that a lot. Customers of Right Message do that with affiliates. So like if, let's say Pat Flynn at Smart Passive Income is sending traffic to like a plugin or something, they'll make it so when you click through, it's like a pull quote from Pat's review of like, you know, this is the best product ever.
Same exact thing.
You go to the purchase page, then there's the feature testimonials, Pat Flynn raving about the product. And yeah, that again, it's not wizardry. It's like,
feels like it though.
If they trust Pat Flynn and they don't know you and they go to your site because of Pat Flynn, like they don't know you. They know Pat, like reference him. Like it's just, it makes total sense.
How are you getting, so that's like I don't want to say obvious. That one's a bit more straightforward how it's set up in terms of how, for example, the website knows that this person likes Pat, right? It's because Pat's an affiliate. So they made this configuration where they come from his affiliate link and it has this URL parameter, show this testimonial. That's a bit more straightforward. But in terms of the actual, you know, even what we were discussing earlier, something like your course, you get the impression that this woman buying it is not a developer. She's a freelance writer. How are most brands obtaining that information?
Yeah. So the way we're doing it with pretty much every creator now is with replacing their normal newsletter confirmation page, opt-in confirmation page with a survey. So you go to like Justin Welsh, Ben Meir, Dan Go, any of these people, you opt in their list, you're going to see a survey. That survey on average is getting an 80 to 85% completion rate. So the majority of all new subscribers get fully segmented. And what you're doing on that page, because they just gave you their email address and they said like, you can send me stuff on the confirmation page instead of saying, oh, go check your email. Instead say, hey, would you mind sparing a few seconds so that I can send you exactly what you need and nothing more? Got a few questions for you. Multiple choice click. Not a fill in the form type thing, but like a monkey click type stuff. And that's,
where are
that's
monkeys?
Been, yeah, I mean, it's been going really well. Like it's like, hey, what are the following three things as the main reason you joined? Oh, this reason. Are you active on LinkedIn? No. Are you active on Twitter? Yes. And yeah, a bunch of people, I mentioned Pat Flynn, he's doing that. Jay Klaus is another one who's doing this with great success. Jay's doing actually something really interesting, which is he does that. And since he has quite a few different products, he, at the end of it, he immediately pitches them on a recommended product with a discount code. And he's added, he's told me he's getting a few hundred dollars a day in added sales directly attributable to that just from saying like, oh, welcome. You shared X, Y, and Z with me. I think you should buy this. Here's $100 off. And yeah, it's been working well.
How do you prevent automations from misfiring? Because that's like the worst case scenario, right? Is like the anti-credibility builder. It's like you try to say the clever thing to like show like, oh, look how much I know. Then you get it wrong. And then they're like, oh, this is a...
Yeah. I mean, okay. So the thing I always tell people is like, so you've probably seen like, there's this concept called account-based marketing where like Intercom and Driftbot and stuff, if you use this. And I've been at like cafes where a little pop-up comes up asking about like, hey, IBM, like, how are you today? And it's like, I don't, but some IBM employee used to like work out of that coffee shop or something, right? So now like Clearbit or whoever thinks that that IP address is IBM. So I find that to be like bad personalization. Cause again, you're making a guess, right? You're assuming off, in this case, an IP address, who they are or what business they work at. So the thing that I like to do is I'm very big about, you know, what we would call zero party data, which is the survey data. So data that they give you willingly, that they're saying, you, this brand, you can know this about me. Because some people will try to infer things off of like, I mean, to be honest, we do too. Like when somebody comes to our website, write message from ConvertKit.com, we just assume you use ConvertKit. It's not guaranteed, but it's kind of safe, right? Like, so, I mean, that's one of the things that can go wrong quickly is if I persisted that they absolutely use ConvertKit, or let's say we sponsor business and software at the conference and they click to, you know, our website from that conference, I might assume they're a software business, but they could be a e-com company looking at that website. And, you know, so you can do a lot of, you can make a lot of mistakes when you assume. So to get back to your question about the, you know, bad messaging kind of thing, I always like to say, if I'm going to do some actual personalization, especially in like an email campaign, I'm going to first off only work off zero party data that they willingly gave me. Like they clicked the button that I use ConvertKit or whatever. And then from there, I'm also going to always parrot back what I know. So like for example, hey, you told me when you joined your list that you use ConvertKit. So here's my plan to help you better utilize ConvertKit to sell more with email or something. So it's not like it's a bit more direct, but it's more conversational. I'm repeating back effectively what they've said to me, but not just like Mad Lib style, like filling the blanks. I'm saying, here's some actual stuff that as a ConvertKit user, you might like this article, you might like that article, you might like this YouTube video that I did. And that kind of thing, which again, if they use ConvertKit and they join my list and they see that email come out, they are much, they're like, this is a, I'm on the right email list. Or somebody who uses, say, ActiveCampaign, they get other content that, you know, they're not going to care about a ConvertKit tutorial video that I have or something. So, I think as long as you're just clear about how you got the data and you're just good about using it and you give people a way to manage their data. Like for instance, if you ask somebody what stage your business is at and they tell you they're just starting out, year later, hopefully they're not there yet. So you should have some method of like refreshing what you know about them from time to time.
All right. We're in the last couple of minutes here. I turned on the treadmill under the desk.
Saw. Yeah. I was like, what happened?
Yeah. Just started progressing through the, it's probably like a little interesting visual implication of it. I just thought it'd be fun. I've been enjoying it. It's like energizing because it's quick bonus rounds is why I turned the desk on treadmill mode.
So you can run faster. Yeah.
Exactly. So you're a serial entrepreneur. And I think one thing that's very true about serial entrepreneurs is that they have more ideas than they have time to execute on.
Yeah.
What are some things that if you had a, you know, just the perfect manager come in, perfect operator, take everything off your plate that you would also be doing. It could be completely related to like opportunities for personalization. Like you think there's clients that need this that just aren't big enough for you to serve. And, but some kid out there who just a win for him might not be a win for you because it's a little smaller. And like, that's a great opportunity, or it could be just completely separate.
So my dream project, if that was true, that nice alternate reality, I would love to build my own email platform. The dumbest thing ever to do, because it would be so obscure. Because I know what I built it for what I always run into roadblocks with tools like ConvertKit. And I'm like, if I could just build this like code based thing that would still operate like an email platform, that'd be wonderful. And I've talked to friends about it and stuff. And, but like, yeah, that it's not going to happen, but that would be my answer.
I mean, maybe it would appeal to engineers, which are a big enough segment to use the thing, right? It might be the worst thing marketers ever seen, but
I don't envy being an ESP with the fact that if you go down, your customers are their business.
Oh my, down.
Yeah, I don't want to be in that business.
That was something my team was tempted to do, right? Because as like I said, I have a team of software engineers that are part of my agency, and we're like, let's start building these products around email newsletters. And they're like, great, let's build an ESP. I'm like, whoop. And they're like, look, there's this open source thing and it's got everything we need. I'm like, this is not what we want. This is not the path. It is just delaying getting in front of customers and making offers that is just making the roadmap longer than it needs to be.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
Interesting. But yeah, Brennan, this has been a blast. The book, like you said, it's in some Barnes and Nobles apparently, which is very cool. It's also, I imagine, on Amazon. You're very active online in several places. What's probably the best single thing for you or for someone listening to this too?
Yeah. The best place would be createandsell.co. That's my twice weekly newsletter. And that's just a mixed bag of things like what we talked about today. If you want to say hi on Twitter, it's Brennan Dunn, BrennanDunn. I'm also trying out LinkedIn. I don't know if I'll actually do anything with that. So you can find me there too.
LinkedIn's a maybe. I would stick to something else for now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until Brennan takes off and personalizes LinkedIn. Well, cool. It's been a blast. Glad the book's a success and really glad we could connect.
Yeah. Thanks, Lewis.